Those words, if you hear yeah, but coming out of your mouth, you're in reactionary mode.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best pieces of advice I also give to people. I say, if you hear yeah, but coming out of your mouth, that means you didn't listen to what the person just said. You just need to match something that they just said. So you got a point, so I need to get a point.
Welcome to Healthwise, the health and longevity podcast brought to you by Sunday Natural. I'm Niels Behrens, and in this podcast, we explore what it truly means to be healthy. Together, we will dive into topics such as medicine, exercise, nutrition, and emotional well-being, always with a wise perspective on what generally benefits us. We live in a world where everyone talks about mental strengths, but few really know what it feels like when life's pushed you to the wall. True mental performance isn't about pushing harder, but about staying connected to yourself when the pressure rises. Dr. Peter Snyder is a psychologist, coach, and founder of Mental Performance and Regeneration. He has worked with some of Europe's most elite football players, but his work reached far beyond this pitch. His research focused on helping people access clarity, emotional balance, and sustainable high performance in everyday life. And so, SL, welcome to the show, Dr. Peter Snyder.
Thank you very much, Nils. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Dr. Snyder reminds me a little bit on this New Year's Eve thing, Dinner for One.
Yes.
You know it?
After living 20 years in Germany, I've been forced to watch this a few times. I've had a few nicknames of the days. Admiral von Schneider is one I've gotten as well. Doctor, and once I became a doctor, it became very, very easy with this. But Dinner for One is... You can't live in Germany without seeing this.
Is it such a German thing?
Yes. Yes, yes. Isn't it? So I grew up in the States, and that's definitely something I had never heard of. I guess it's British, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's actually a British show, I recall. But yeah, it's a classic. All my German friends are big fans of
Big fans, one, big yeah. fans, yeah. So anyhow, Peter, how important are Sundays for your own mental health reset?
They're really important. They're really cool. Sundays, you know, were always family days back home. My mother was always someone that said, you know, get up, go to church, come back, have the family pot roast, that kind of thing. So Sundays are kind of about a spiritual, religious kind of, we can say regeneration, but just a reset. We have the whole day, and then this is the day that we rest. And for us, family was a big thing. And it's something that I, with my daughter, for example, and my wife, we usually have pancakes or waffles. We have that part as well, that we sit together on Sunday and really try to have a little bit of a ritual, let's say.
That's what I would like to ask. So you have a ritual or routine, which is more or less the same.
Yeah. So when I worked in football, it was very difficult. Sundays were often for player regeneration, meaning that I would be working at... However, when I would get back, one of the first things we do was say, okay, as soon as I'm back, you know, data comes home, we make pancakes, waffles, we do something together, and then basically it's family time. It's very, very important. So
nice. So you mentioned already you work with athletes who face extreme pressure.
Yeah.
So especially I would say soccer, football has even a higher, let's say, status in comparison to the States. I would say maybe then in the States is more American football or
correct.
Basketball or baseball, things like that. But in Germany, soccer is a big thing.
Correct.
So,
correct.
And what can someone, I would say, juggling job, family, and everyday demands learn from the way pros handle stress?
Oof. You know, the thing that pros do, the best ones, is really define time after really hard work to then recover and regenerate and allow their bodies to gain enough energy so for the next day they can give 100% again. You know, this is the thing we talk about, guys who last until they're 25 or the guys that last until they're 35, right? And it is the mix of both physical and mental, both stress and then recovery. And what we're finding more and more, and we talk about European football, level of Champions League and things like this, and then you have Euro Cups and World Cups. These guys, they don't really have these long, long breaks, so they kind of have to force these breaks in between. And this is probably something we always have to kind of be careful, right? So that the average man, the average Joe, as we always kind of say in the States, you know, he's working his 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. He looks at a football player, an athlete, and he thinks to himself, that guy trains 2 hours, and then he's got the rest of the day off.
goes into his Bugatti and drive into the sunset.
So right, yeah, and he's not wrong in that sense. Whereas the bus driver or the plumber or the teacher or whatever job we want to take, or even the accountant, they're not wrong in that sense. However, that football player knows that they are going to have to perform in front of 60,000 people on the weekend, plus TV audience, plus whoever, and so this kind of really hard stress where you say, okay, I'm really working hard for 2-3 hours a day, I'm really focused, but then I'm also taking 2-3 hours to really recover my body, my mind, and get really mentally ready for the next day and the next day, because it just keeps going and keeps going. With this knowledge that I'm probably going to be judged on 90 minutes of my life for the next week by every single person I come in contact with for the next 6-7 days. That's something that a footballer has to deal with, right? As an average person, what I try to tell them is learn that you really also need to find the way to recover for yourself. And that doesn't mean go on autopilot. That doesn't mean just come home and turn on Netflix. That really means actively find ways to recover. And, I've also had this conversation with an average person where they say, well, with 2 kids or 3 kids, driving them to their own practices and this and that, when am I supposed to do that? It's a very fair question, and there's not a single one-fits-all answer for that, but there is an answer for it, and it really just then becomes for that person, okay, where, how, what exactly can allow me to recover? So if you're going to take something from professional athletes, really nowadays take this one piece of information that they really find ways to recover, because if they don't, they won't be able to perform consistently.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you're saying, because especially you're saying this 90 minutes and you say 60,000 people, and I had a really interesting experience while COVID, and I won a ticket from the lottery to go into the stadium doing a match, and I think we were in total 5,000 people, something like that. So in Hamburg, this normally 57,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and what was quite interesting then, because when some of the fans were complaining and saying, hey, you're such an idiot or something like the player could hear it.
Right.
So, because normally when you're in a stadium with 57,000 people, right, so the noise overall is
mass noise, but not like this particular voice.
Not this particular voice, but you really see that someone was really shouting against one of the player, and then the player really reacted.
Yeah.
And this was quite interesting to see. So at the end, it's for the players maybe better that there are 60,000 people instead of just 5,000, because you can't, they won't hear what the people are exactly addressing to them. But I had an interview with Arne Friedrich. He was one of the national football players some years ago. And he also mentioned about the opening match of the World Championship 2006. Mm. It was Germany against Costa Rica. And so at the end, we won the game, but he made a mistake. And I didn't remember it, but he said he was really, it was such a big question mark on his person, on his performance, on everything, just because of this one mistake he made doing this match, which, let's see, is more or less a whole football-interested world we're looking at.
Right.
And have you made experience like this in your work with the athletes that they are really, let's say, had a situation like this where they had such a pressure, such a, let's say, also question mark on the things they are doing?
Right, absolutely. Great question. There's best example would be things like when I've been to the German Cup final twice, the DFB Pokal final twice with RB. The furthest I went in the European scene was the Europa Pokal in the UEFA, it's not the Champions League, but the one below, the Euro League semifinal, where I've seen pressure really, really on a player's face, where I've really seen them noticing it and feeling it. And it's hard to describe that. Even though there are 60,000 people screaming around you, maybe you think they're giving you pressure or trying to support you. One of the most astounding things as working with Leipzig, of course, not everyone's favorite club in Germany. We were against Freiburg in the first final that I was a part of. We ended up winning, and the Freiburg fans were just rabid. They were just loud, and it was just about how they're gonna just eat us alive. And yet, one of the experiences that some of the players talked to me about is, it's not the 30,000-40,000 Freiburg fans that make you nervous. It's your own voice in your head. Mm-hmm. So there's 40,000 voices telling you you're the worst, you're terrible. There's maybe 20,000 saying, go, you're the best. And yet it's the one in your own head that really is causing the greatest amount of pressure, the greatest amount of question marks, the only one that really matters in that sense. You know, there's a couple other voices, the coaches or maybe a teammate, maybe your mother's voice in your head, your father's voice in your head, they stick there. But at the end of the day, it's really just your recreation of their voice in your own head, right? And so this is one of those fascinating things, is if you're able to, can't control the voice in your head, I never believe that's not possible, it's not how it works. However, if you can try to train your voice to be as positive as possible, as supportive as possible, and even if it is negative, accept that that's a very human, normal thing in that moment, in those finals, in those big, big games, you'll be able to perform.
Yeah. But nevertheless, I think it's pretty hard. And I would say there's an Tibetanian word, it's called seva, and it's meaning self-compassion.
Yeah.
And is it something which is relevant in your work to train your clients or your people on a way of self-compassion? So that means that you're treating yourself like your best friend instead of, I don't know, your worst enemy.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it, right? So the balance then becomes 100% true. We have this negativity bias anyways, right? So perfect example, Anne Friedrich you're talking about, he's talking about a situation in a game. It was the first game of the World Cup. We're talking about the World Cup, right? So biggest games, home World Cup, by the way, was in Germany.
Yeah, it was
right?
In Germany, Everything.
You know, and so he's thinking, every single person in Germany clearly remembers the mistake from Anne Friedrich. And I'm sure there are quite a few fans that say, oh, yes, I definitely remember this.
However, but I don't. I don't.
I don't either, for example. I remember 4-2. I remember a massive goal from 40 yards out, I think, from Thorsten Frings, I think, at that time. If I'm getting that memory right. But, like, these things I remember, those emotions I remember as a fan watching this, not as a psychologist. But, of course, that player, he's going to take probably one of the most negative events with him, and he's going to carry it with him then to the next match, even for the rest of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So it's now, it is more 19 years ago. And he's still talking about it.
Exactly. Oh, it's absolutely anchored in there, right? And so this is exactly what you're talking about. Self-compassion, understanding that, hey, Anne Friedrich, do you want how many players have made mistakes at this level, at higher levels, at lower levels, all these types of things, right? And understanding that even Anne Friedrich is human.
Yeah.
Right. Or even, some people think Manu Neuer maybe is not, but he's also human. Absolutely. You know, they're all human. All these top athletes, they're still human at the end of the day. Right. And so it becomes this balance of self-compassion, of forgiving yourself, being kind to yourself, being your own best friend without inflating your ego.
No, definitely not.
And this is where you always.
But I think this is what you are when you're doing a mistake. And you have a really true best friend.
Yeah.
He wouldn't say, no, you did it great.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a wonderful point. And this is where, because what happens then? If your ego takes over, it's a form of self-protection. You did it great. You're fine. You're wonderful, right? Instead of saying, as you're really putting it really well, a best friend says, hey, man, you did this mistake, and you're still a great person.
Yeah.
It's both are true, right? So that's a really good point. I like that.
Yeah. So to all our female listeners, because 70% of our listeners are normally female, yeah, so maybe if they are not so football interested, I can promise you we are leaving the football area more or less in a minute. I just have one more question in terms of pressure, because I really found it so, unbelievable, I must really say, because also this is something I didn't have in my mind. When you see the documentary about David Beckham, and when you see then in the World Championship when he made this one thing which gave him a penalty, red card, and then he had to leave the match, and then Yeah, England has lost the match and went out of the championship. Yep. So the whole nation hates him.
Yeah.
Even the manager wasn't on his side and made some negative comments on television. Mm. In a situation like this, he was maybe, I think, 24, 25, beginning of the 20s. So now from your point of view as a psychologist, so is this something you would say can really break a person completely? Because I'm really astonished that he's not completely broken after that.
And the short answer is yes. Absolutely, it can. It's again, there's a book recently released by Mel Robbins called Let Them, which is quite popular right now. I know it, and I think that's kind of was his David Beckham's kind of defense on these things. Is kind of let them talk, let them say what they want about me, let the coach say what they want about me. I need to be me. I need to focus on me. I know what I can do. I know I made a mistake. I know I can be better. The short answer is absolutely yes. I don't know how he chose to deal with it. The way in which when I remember this event as well and following the rest of his career, he just seemed like someone who kind of was used to just ignoring these types of, not negative criticisms, but what he found to be unjust criticisms, he himself. Now, that's his own moral compass. Everyone has their own way of putting this. You know, whatever the coach said or what fans said, you know, that's for other people to judge. I think that's it's a very pivotal point. I think that's a great point, though, that everyone can learn from is you can just take that little bit, whether you like David Beckham or England or even football, you can really take that one little bit from him and say, okay, with all these people that kind of fought for and played for and gave everything for and was passionate for, and all of a sudden, yeah, I made a massive mistake, and they just seemed to turn on me. A lot of people just turned on him, and he just said, okay, I'll accept that they're human too, that they're going to have their voices, they're going to have their criticism, and I'm going to continue with my career. I don't think it was easy for him. I wasn't there. I wasn't next to him. I can't say.
Yeah, I would say it was also at a time where, let's say, have some psychological support on your side wasn't so common. This is, I think, correct. It's now 25 years ago or something like that. Yeah, and I would say also to get help, especially as a man, also in such a masculine world like football, asking for psychological help, I would say it wasn't common at all.
Correct. That's very true. Yeah, it's come a long way. It's changed. We focus a lot of things. Of course, focusing on what we like to say is that mental performance. Now, granted, a healthy mind is essential for a great and consistent performance. Again, it doesn't have to always seem. We talk, of course, you know very well, a lot about prevention and a lot of times, for example, for me, I talk a lot about mental flexibility rather than mental strength. In the sense that I'd like to make you so mentally flexible that when these hits come, when the downsides come, when the negative experiences come, you're able to absorb that and continue then to grow from it and rise above it. And so this is something as well that I think back then, I think some guys probably had it in their back pocket and just weren't talking about it as much. And now it's kind of progressed to people say, okay, how can we build this into our systems and training, again, not just young footballers, but young athletes to be well-rounded, mentally flexible, and good people at the end of the day.
So this really leads me just perfectly to my next question. So now I'm going back to my female listeners. So many women live, and I would say they are living with an invisible mental load. Okay. So responsibility, perfectionism, emotional caretaking. How can they protect their energy without feeling like they are letting someone down?
Oof. So how can they protect their their own energy without without, so they keep their energy.
The thing is when they're doing something for themselves, very often it's the last person they are thinking of.
Okay, I get you.
So because they have to, the children have to be ready, or the children have to be happy. So maybe the husband sometimes. Sometimes you want to make a career. You want to be good looking. You want to be in shape. You want to, I don't know, being, some of them also want to be the perfect tread wife. I don't know. But for me, I would say in the past, in the very past, let's say in the classical, classical way, women just have to look pretty and take care of the children and the household and things like that. Nowadays, they still have to look pretty. They still have to take care of their children, but in addition, they also have to be, let's say, making a good career. They also have to be. So I would say the overall mental load is much higher nowadays for all of us, but I would say especially for women, because they still have this traditional role plus the additional modern role.
Right. So, wow. Great question. Not an easy answer. I think most of your questions won't have easy answers today, but that's the point. I think speaking to, again, as a from a performance psychologist point of view, someone who focuses literally on how do I perform mentally, how do I regenerate well enough so that I can be consistent every single day. I think women today, they really need to find that local support. I'm gonna take a big stand on this. I think it's very important. And what they mean is not find your village. It's kind of this concept. Not just finding your support online, finding the things you like, the things you can connect to. We can find our interests online very quickly. We can find things that, of course, we want to maybe compare ourselves to. And it's the very, very common bias to compare yourself always to the one step just a little bit better, right? Ooh, they just have that one extra bedroom, or they have, ooh, they seem to have a dryer, not just a washer, that washer and dryer, whatever the tiny thing is, right? Or they have the next step in the career, they're up one step up the ladder already and they're 2 years younger, whatever it is. But we look at that one thing better than us. We don't look at that thing very often that's maybe one less than us. It doesn't really give us such a satisfaction to be like, well, I have one little thing better, or I'm one step higher. No, I look the other way. I want to progress. I want to do things. So I think one of the biggest ways to save energy is to get offline, really, to as much as possible. You get on there to get some great ideas, to connect to certain things that interest you without a doubt. Do your best to really invest your energy in your local village. And what that mean is, even in the city, so I live in a city, I've lived in a city my whole life. I've recently moved into a small, block, if you will. It's like a small courtyard area. And there's two buildings that look right across from each other. And there's about, I have a daughter who's 4 years old. And there's four, five, six, seven other families who have kids between 3 and 16, 17, 18 even. And before we just moved in here a couple years ago, and before, life just seemed very, very difficult for my wife a lot of times, and things like just basic ideas of like, who am I gonna, if I need some help, I need to call somebody, I need to do, I need to get some more done, but I want to work on my career, I want to do these things. And what we found now is with this local community, she feels so much more empowered, to share that little story. I think that really helps her a lot, and it helps me a lot as a family, helps our daughter a lot. And I think it's scary, though, to really knock on doors next to you and kind of find that little local community. But what I've noticed is these little quick dinners with each other's kids, or even our neighbor walks our dog. The 14-year-old girl, she really likes her dog, so she takes her dog for that. Saves you 20 minutes, saves you 25 minutes, and she's happy, the dog's happy, and then she started talking to our daughter. She starts babysitting for our daughter now as well. We start going on dates, which we've had more difficulty going on just because we have a kid. And this is like this tiny little piece of advice I would really give a lot of women, and because I don't have all the answers, but I think this is one that I've found to be a really great recipe for success is if you have people close by that you can count on, that you can rely on, it not just it doesn't just save you energy, it really gives you energy. It's very rewarding. It's a very difficult, it's not an easy step. I don't think it's an easy step. But I guess as someone who's moved to a foreign country, doesn't have their parents around them anymore, all these types of things, it's really about finding this kind of local community.
Yeah, I would agree. Just one question concerning gender in general. Is there a difference in mental strengths, a gender difference, or would you say they are just, let's say, cultural stories that we are repeating?
Yeah. There are absolutely differences in terms of all the people that I've worked. I've worked with women's teams. I've worked with men's teams in my career. They have different needs. In general, we're talking in general. I'll give you an example. Something I think you'd really like. I was recently talking to a former to a fellow psychologist about analyzing men's and women's professional football teams.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that in his review of the players' gestures, that the men were staggeringly more emotional.
Oh, really?
Than the women.
That's interesting.
So in terms of missing a shot or a bad pass or a bad tackle or something happening or something great happened, the men showed much greater amounts of emotion on average than the women during a 90-minute game. The women communicated unbelievably amounts to each other with gestures, with obviously with words, but they were found to be overly communicative with one another about where to be, where to stand, do this, do that, and help each other, assist each other. I think this is a lot when we look at, then of course, how women feel and men feel maybe about what support they need, whether they're willing to admit it or not, is that men have this need for their emotional release and this emotional support that they probably don't always admit as much as they would like. I mean, my own experience I can talk about. With women, I think we may be pushed towards the emotional support and think, oh, that's traditionally a woman needs more emotional support. Sometimes it seems at least by what this last thing had study that said, is actually they just want good, clear communication. They want clear communication, clear defined roles. They want to know who needs to be where, what needs to do. They have this need to really communicate with one another. So I think that's one of the more scientific, cool answers to that question, is about what differences really play out between men and women, at least in a sports setting. But I wouldn't be so surprised to see them playing out in professional settings and family settings as well.
Yeah, very interesting. So now if we take the gender differences by side, if you have to define mental strengths in just a single sentence, what would it be?
Mental strength, as I said, I use the word, it's mental flexibility. It's the ability to have an extremely positive or negative experience and still remain constant. That's really the most important thing.
Okay, cool. You often also talk about emotional clarity. Mm. What does that mean?
So this is where probably one of the biggest practices come in place for me, and that's meditation. Emotional clarity is really understanding the emotions that are going on throughout the day. Okay, so it's not about not being emotional, not being blank, not being bland, nothing like that. As anyone who knows me, that would be the complete opposite. I'm quite an emotional person. It's really about understanding what emotion is happening, what is affecting me right now. And if I have the time to reflect and say, okay, what is causing this emotional response? So again, I mentioned just meditation at the beginning, because for me, it's kind of a start in the morning of, all right, what am I maybe carrying with me through the night or from the previous day? What am I thinking about, my expectations for this day? And then towards the end of the day, a cool down meditation or so is kind of a, what did I learn today? What was good today? What really got me going today? Something I actually do with my four-year-old daughter when I put her to bed is, you know, she doesn't know she's doing meditation. That doesn't matter. But it's about being a mindful moment of what was really good today. What was one thing that really made you happy today? What was something that made you really sad today? Just these two kinds of highs and lows, to try to teach her what I would consider is emotional clarity, just understanding I have emotions, what they are, where they come from.
Okay, would this also be your advice how we can develop it in the middle of a chaotic week?
Oh, if we have the time, absolutely, absolutely. Again, I would be one of those persons who says you always have the 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the 5 minutes is enough or not is, of course, a whole different story.
When you look how many minutes that people are spending on Netflix or Instagram or TikTok or you name it, I would say 5 minutes are easy to find.
You would. It's easy to find. I mean, it's the same thing with working out in general. You can find the time to work out. You can time to invest. It is that you also need this vegetation time, as I would call it. You need this Netflix time. It exists. It has its own purpose. I don't think it's a negative thing in general. But yeah, that's the 5 minutes in a chaotic week, a 10 minutes on a day in a chaotic week are gold. And they won't necessarily feel like that at the beginning. It might seem like a big waste of time at the beginning because you're sitting there and your thoughts are while you're thinking, I need to stop my thoughts or I need to calm, I can't be thinking. No, really what that's doing is it's just allowing you to recognize that your brain is completely, I would say, scrambled eggs is a good metaphor. And maybe you do need to not just take the 10 minutes. Maybe you need 15, 20 minutes. It again, as you said, everyone can maybe find that time if they really want, right? But then it's really about taking that time, 15 minutes, and really just listening to what kind of thoughts are going in. If you listen long enough, it will become clear.
Yeah. No, I just recently wrote a book, and I also have a little chapter about meditation. I said, well, one of the biggest misunderstanding from my point of view is really that the people are expecting that meditation means thinking nothing.
Correct.
Because for me, I'd also describe it more a little bit like clouds. You see that the clouds are coming, but you also have to let them go.
Yeah.
And I think this is the most important part of it. But if you really, I would say even the most experienced people on meditation are not that, they are all still have thoughts.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I would think they. I hope they have thoughts.
Yeah, not doing the meditation. Doing the meditation.
Well, what I ask you, it's a great thing. So for you as well, though, if you meet these people, I know you've got to meet a lot of clear-minded people, strong-willed people. It doesn't seem that they have a thought or a thought process where they don't have negative thoughts. It doesn't seem like every single thing that comes out of their mouth is just perfectly articulate, right? So they themselves are also working through, you and you yourself and me myself, we're always working through how do I want to formulate this? How is my brain working through this emotion, through this?
Yeah, definitely. Right? I just was as a guest in a podcast yesterday where there are two, let's say, founders in Germany, extremely successful. So and even they have still an imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And I was really astonished to hear that. But nevertheless, you see, you can't get rid of it completely.
Yeah.
So there are always moments where you think you are an imposter. So I'm pretty sure. So but when we talk about, let's say, how do you teach people, I would say, self-leadership when the outside world is completely out of their control?
Oh, yeah. You know, this kind of boils down to the one, you know, let's say the one voice you can control is the one inside your head. And as I said at the beginning, I don't think you can control the voice. I think you can train the voice to try to be, again, more, say, positive or more supportive. I think you can do that. You're talking about self-leadership and a chaotic world is a great way to put it. It's really about what are the things that I can control in a day, and there are quite a few. What are the things I can control, and how do I perceive them? How do I want to let's say, how do I want to carry them out? So the things that I can do, I'm going to do them as well as I possibly can, right? Because I get to control that. Whether or not that person likes it, another person likes it, another person criticizes it, that's, again, that goes out of my control really quickly. We realize really quickly how little we control, right? That's sometimes it's a terrifying thought in some ways, right? How little we control in the universe. But it's also very freeing in the sense of, okay, I have this tiny little things that I can really influence, and I'd like to do that. And I'd like to do that in a way that's important to me. And so when I talk about self-leadership, I work a lot with the ACT model, acceptance and commitment therapy. And one of the biggest things that there is really just staying in the present moment, but acting in a way that's in accordance to our values. So if I stay in the moment, that's the first important thing, because if I'm here and now, that means I have control over the here and now. I don't have control over the past or the future. It doesn't
Definitely,
happen,
yeah.
Right?
All we have is now.
Right. And the next thing, of course, is I have to act in a way that I believe in, that fits in a way that's important to me. I can give you a personal experience. I was given very bad news recently, and about a professional topic, and it's just a very disappointing no, let's say that, from a client, where I was really expecting it was going to go in a positive direction, and kind of came the opposite way. And I was, you know, I'm human. At the same day, I had a few hours. I just really struggled with this, and I thought about how can I turn this around? How can I change this? How can I do this? And the reality is that this person had said no. They had made their decision, and I was thinking in every single way possible how to change their decision. And the reality is it was over. It was in the past, and it took me time to really sit with my thoughts. And I remember I sat and I said, okay, I'm going to just sit for 10 minutes by myself. I'm going to listen to my music. It's just my absolute muse in the sense of inspiration. I put on my music that I really love to listen to, and found myself then saying, okay, that door is closed. Look at it. It is a closed door. It is locked. It does not exist anymore. But you are so much focusing on that door and not the thousands of doors that are in every other single direction. And this happens to every single one of us all the time, right? Yeah. And so self-leadership, to come back to the very essence of this question, is finding those moments and finding great growth opportunities in those moments of that door is closed and yet I have 1,000 to go through. Maybe I really want that door because it's closed. The closer I get to acceptance and really seeing how exciting some of those other opportunities are, it becomes very exciting very quickly to take a step in the other direction.
Yeah, I think this is a good example for many, many people, many occasions also. I would say also especially in relationships, so especially when the people are heartbroken. I had an interview with Dr. Zach Bush, and it was quite interesting what he said. He said that it's all about expectation. And when he felt heartbroken, then he just seen that maybe his expectation were wrong and the expectation were disappointed. And I would say very often you just have to think about it, how realistic your expectation maybe also were. Yeah. And some people are all in your head. And which also leads me to my next question, because I think that under stress, many people fall into, let's say, predictable thinking traps. And what would you think from your point of view are the most common ones? So maybe when you know them, and then you maybe feel a little bit more, or you identify them a little bit earlier that you are in this trap.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah, so we become reactionary. That's the basic issue is we become imprisoned by our emotions and our thoughts in a way, and we become, as I say, reactionary. We don't act anymore on what's important to us. We react in a way to, maybe someone hurts me, I want to hurt them. So one of the biggest traps, of course, is you said no to me in this one question, one example, or a relationship. You saying no to me, okay, well, I'm going to go say the most terrible things about you to every single person I know, which, if you think about yourself and your own values, and you probably wouldn't want to hang out with that person who says all these negative things about another person. Even if they did hurt you, it's one of those things where, again, this you hurt me, I hurt you, is one of the biggest traps, and one of the biggest pitfalls, I think, in all of human experience. And it's extremely, let's put it this way, understandable.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not without reason that even in, you know, one of the biggest books of all time, the Bible, you know, turn the other cheek is in there with Jesus being slapped. And they would say, no, turn the other cheek. And I might have misquoted a little bit there, but the general idea.
Yeah, the general idea.
Idea of this, you get hit and then you just want to hit back. And that, getting out of that cycle, because if that person wants to hurt you, there's probably something on their end. In not always, you know, it's not generalized everything, but there's probably something going on that end. Really, really great piece of advice I once got about this, and this fits in with this perfectly. I think it was Simon Sinek. It was an interview with him, and I thought it was brilliant, and I really use it a lot when in general working with people and their emotions and getting into these traps. He said, if someone is going off about you leaving your cup on a table,
yeah,
and the emotion is an 8 or 9 out of 10,
yeah,
10 is the highest.
Yeah.
It's clearly not about the cup on the table.
It's not about the cup. That's pretty true.
Right. So but what happens often is in a relationship, there's a cup on the table, you didn't do the dishes, or you left the blanket, you forgot the laundry, it's still soaking wet, whatever. And you know, the partner comes home, And they just scream about the laundry or the cup on the table or whatever it is. And your instant reaction is, how unfair am I being treated right now for leaving a cup on the table? You know, and then you're going to just get up to that energy because you need to match it. You need to defend your ego and yourself and what, you know, your own values. And, well, you can't tell me I left a cup on the table. You left. I don't know.
Yeah, you say something which is absolutely inappropriate.
Yes.
And saying, yeah, but I don't know, you never brush your teeth carefully. Or, I don't know, something stupid, which is,
this is great.
Really doesn't have anything to do with the other thing.
It has no value to the conversation. And most importantly, this yeah, but, those words, if you hear yeah, but coming out of your mouth, you're in reactionary mode.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best pieces of advice I also give to people. I say, if you hear yeah, but coming out of your mouth, that means you didn't listen to what the person just said. You just need to match something that they just said.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a point. So I need to get a point. And this is probably, again, we talk about these thinking traps or these reactions. Now, let's be honest. Sometimes these things happen. So I'm going to say a lot of yeah, buts the rest of my life. It's still going to happen. It's, again, noticing that trap of getting into that argument, catching yourself into an argument, and stopping, pausing, and maybe, as silly as it sounds, apologizing for leaving a cup on the table, even though you've actually cleaned up the cup 100 times before.
Yeah.
And just disarming that person right now to see what's actually going on. So the trap is very much wanting to simply match someone's energy, negative or positive. And often, in a negative way, if someone hurts us in some way, we want to hurt them back emotionally or, unfortunately, also physical.
Yeah. I have it. I've made the experience very often. So I'm here in Berlin. I do more or less everything by bicycle. And sometimes I would say I'm driving in an efficient way.
Mm.
And sometimes people are, don't like, make a reaction.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and from my point of view, too aggressive reaction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would say maybe in the past, I don't know, shouted something back to them. I don't know, fuck you, or asshole, or whatever. And I see that from this aggression he made and with my reaction, I'm not feeling well afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So. And then I had this interview this year about kindness, radically kindness.
Cool.
And we talked about it and how good it is for yourself to be kind to other people.
Mm.
And I realized that now when I have a situation like this, I'm not reacted aggress reacting aggressively again. I'm saying, so thank you, have a nice day.
Yeah.
So, which maybe makes the other person even more upset. But nevertheless, I feel still good afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm not going on this level he had.
Yeah.
And I really see that with this reaction, I'm feeling fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Even if he didn't like it, maybe my reaction, but nevertheless, I see if you don't match
yes.
this situation,
yeah.
It's much better for you.
I have one small anecdote I'd love to share about this. When I was a young child, my best friend's mother, I was at her house, and I was being a little brat. It happens when you're 7, 8 years old, and I said something smart to her. Well, just a smart aleck was not a not nice statement to her. She was basically a second mother to me. She raised me as well when my mother wasn't there. So we were very, very, very close. And I said something just mean-spirited. What shouldn't have said it. You know, I look back, I don't know. And she looked at me, she says, no, sorry, I don't accept that. In the nicest, calmest, kindest way. And I was just this confused little kid. I thought, what do you mean? You know, whatever I said, you're stupid or whatever, you know, dumb thing. She's like, no, I don't accept that. That's your statement. You are upset. You are angry, but I'm not angry. I'm not, that's yours. And she just left. And I stood there feeling like such an idiot, just empty.
Yeah.
And it was the most powerful way of dealing with a young little brat that, you know, I really took that with me. I still talk about it now. I'm talking 40 years old. That's, you know, 30 years ago. And I still take that with me. I just thought it was such a beautiful way. And you talking, as I said, giving someone kindness who clearly gives you aggression, it causes great confusion.
Totally.
Usually for the aggressor, right? They just don't kind of understand what's going on, right?
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful diffusion method. You know, we probably should be using more often than we are aware of.
Definitely, definitely. What role do mindfulness and body awareness play in your work with your high performers?
Okay. Yeah. Mindfulness is really just a daily kind of routine. It's people like to, of course, I say, confuse it with meditation. I think it's a little bit of, you know, it's a different area. Mindfulness, in terms of, if we're talking about the elite footballers I work with, it's just about being in the moment, right? It's about being in that moment, that present moment. I'm speaking about act before, right? And so it's not about being calm or collected necessarily. It can be about being a cup on a table.
Yeah.
And the emotion is an 8 or 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
10 is the highest.
Yeah.
You know, an athletic aggression towards, you know, a football, something like this. That is a keystone part of just understanding what is required at that moment. What do I need to bring to this moment? What kind of energy do I need to bring to this moment? As I was saying, with a partner, maybe it's diffusing. Maybe it's giving kindness. But maybe for performing, yeah, it's sticking my chest out. Yeah, it's being a little bit bigger. Yeah, it's being leaning in a little bit more. It's not about intimidating the other in that sense of trying to be a negative person. But in any business sense, it's absolutely okay, acceptable, and I'm talking about my elite performers, to show your best side and the pride in your abilities, in your personality, who you are as a person. That's true self-confidence. That's true self-confidence, not inflated or, you know, whatnot, so, or ego or something like that. So mindfulness in that sense is really just understanding what is required at this moment and what skill set, what abilities of my own do I need to bring.
Would you say there's one mental exercise from your professional sports that would recommend to absolutely everyone?
I mean, meditation is the easy,
easy answer.
Easy answer. In that sense, yes. I think meditation is just a really wonderful way to disconnect with the world, connect to yourself. One thing I find also I highly recommend is a type of eye training. If you've never had looked at, yeah, people have, you know, they go through, maybe they wear glasses even, but they get their eyes checked out. Yeah, that's healthy. Everything's good. Doing certain eye movements, like watch it, and if you look them up on YouTube, there's very simple exercises for training the eyes.
You have a YouTube channel where we can see it, or?
Not my own, but you can, I guess, if you look up eye training for lazy eye, even something
All
like
right.
this, something very simple like this. There's 5 minute exercises, there's 10 minute exercises. I think you'll start to see the world a little bit differently. You'll notice that your eyes are a little more keen. I mean, our eyes are really, for those that are able to see, are just such a gateway to the world. Granted, our noses and our hearing, these tend to touch, these things give us a lot of more, I want to say, rudimentary, like really deep feelings. Eyes, a little bit less so. So like when you think of like your favorite song or, when your favorite food as a kid, that boom, those emotions come. Eyes don't do that as much, but eyes, just if we train them a little bit more, we notice that we start to perceive the world that's a little bit better, a little more clearer. It's something that I would really recommend to every single person, especially because we are looking at screens so much, whether it's our phones or computers. And it's really 5 minutes a few times a week. Something like this, 10 minutes can make a difference. You'll notice that you just, yeah, you tend to be able to focus on one thing better,
Yeah.
as well as you pick up a little bit of things in your periphery a little bit better. You don't need to move as much because your eyes can kind of move themselves a little bit easier. It's a this tiny little thing.
Yeah, and I do it quite regularly. I'm normally taking a look on my thumb, and I'm focusing on my thumb, and then I also do it in front of a window, and then I look outside to one of the farthest points away. And then I'm focusing on this point, and then again on the thumb point. So I would say I do it less. It takes me less than a minute, but nevertheless, I see how good it is for my eyes, especially looking on a screen the whole day. And even if, for me, the older I get, the more I'm enjoying to have a wide look. So because I have the feeling that it's quite important for me, necessary. So especially when I'm entering a room where's a which is on the top, and where I have the have a have the possibility to look really wide, I see how relaxing it is for me. It's quite interesting to see. Yeah, it's a good answer. Focus is no, sorry, skip the question, because we I think we had it already. So Blanca, please take it out. You work with people consistently on the spotlight. How do you teach them to stay grounded when criticism or self-doubt hits? So it's very close to the question we had already, but is there a kind of exercise you're doing with them?
I mean, it's more about setting up an environment that's very conducive to that, right? So the people around you, surrounding yourself with good people who tell you the truth. Don't inflate the ego, but don't criticize unnecessarily,
Yeah.
right? So this is one of the biggest things that I tend to try to do with these guys that are in the spotlight. Keep those good people around you. Make sure you have that small circle that you can trust. Extremely important. If at all possible, absolutely no social media. Just if you need it for your career, have someone do it for you. That's one of the things I would absolutely
I
recommend.
have to say, I'm not consuming social media so much. I'm just doing posting. So I would say it's more time efficient in a way,
Fair enough.
because I see that just, I don't know, posting a story takes me a minute, and then I'm normally put my Instagram off again. But there are many people which are consuming hours in social
Yeah,
media.
of
So
course.
I'm not the consumer, I'm more the creator.
I don't think the thing is, even consuming the social media isn't so bad as much as, it's not great. It's at least for these guys and girls at this level, it's really, you can only tune out so many voices, right? So
Okay, I
as
got your point.
flexible as I'd like my players to be. If you see someone write, you're just shite 500 times, at one point you say, okay, well now it just becomes dumb. At the same time, it doesn't feel good. It's like it doesn't really go both ways. So it's something where I try to again make the environment as intact and as intact and possible as possible around them, so that they get healthy constructive feedback to help them progress, like any other human being who doesn't normally have to deal with maybe the public, let's say the public criticism. Other than that, there's definitely things that we do again in terms of self-affirmations, where I would say, these are the things I want you to repeat about yourself, so that you kind of, give yourself that little bit of padding to deal with being in the spotlight.
I'm a big fan of affirmations. Could you make me for our listeners an example of what could be an affirmation?
Yeah, absolutely. One example is, today I feel strong, positive, powerful, and I'm excited for every challenge that will come my way today.
I think this is an affirmation more literally everyone could use.
Yes. That's right. I made it as sort of as general as possible. But the fact is, you can identify it with yourself as, I'd like to be positive. I won't necessarily be it. The other thing is, I don't say how to say, like, oh, today's going to be a great day. I think,
It's a lie.
yeah, you just don't know that.
No.
But you can say, I'm excited for the challenge of the day. At least now I am. Maybe later I'll be less excited.
Yay!
But why go into the day as much as possible? Why go into the day with, oh, today, what's going to happen today? No, I want to at least start in this way, and then the day will bring what the day will bring, and my flexibility will hold or won't hold. I'm a human at the end of the day. Then I'll go ahead at the end of the day and take a review and see how it went.
Definitely. If you start negative into a day or an event, it will be negative and the other way around. So I made the experience sometimes when I have to go to an event where I'm really not keen to go. So normally I'm always keen to go to an event, but nevertheless, sometimes there's the occasion because I think most of the people are boring. But you see at the end that even the most boring person in the world have an interesting story. You just have to find it. And I think when you change your mindset and see if you just start digging for the most interesting stories this person has to share, you just have to find what he's passionate about it. And then when you see, let them speak about the passion he has or she has, and then you see that you can understand the passion in a way. And that it became quite fascinating to understand why this person is so passionate about, I don't know, fishing or having his own imkering or whatever it is, it could be interesting if you really learn a little bit more about it. And if you stay curious, everything could be exciting.
And this is honestly the basic for my for basis for a foundation for my work is, I can talk about every single, say, tool or way to analyze a player, way to improve their vision, way to improve their regeneration. If there's not a connection between me and the client, that, as you're saying, is that I'm interested in their story and I want to be a part of their story. And probably most important always to say is, as a psychologist, and I think this is something you can relate to as well as someone who interviews people, is it's their story. I want to hear their story. I want to be part of their story. It's not how am I inserting myself into this story, but rather a genuine interest in them, who they are, how they want to develop. And if you can focus on that, it becomes very interesting very quickly.
Definitely, definitely. I couldn't agree more. I would be really interesting if you can share a moment when mental training made a bigger difference than the physical preparation.
Okay. I can say two things. One story I enjoy sharing because I was very proud of this moment was in with Leipzig going into the final, where we had just recently lost the semifinal, and in the Euro League, which we were expected to win. It was a big disappointment. And the club at that point had never won a title. And we had a couple games to go in the season to try to stay in the Champions League. And then we had the German Cup final coming up. And It was absolutely imperative, of course, to make some adjustments after losing the semis and whatnot. But one of the themes that went through the locker room that I was able to speak to with some of the players was, we just don't win these big games. The big games, we just can't seem to do it. And that there was a big core of that team that had been there for 5, 6 years for some time. And I was kind of the new kid on the block at that time. And I went ahead and I said, you know, I think there needs to be some way of kind of showing them who they are in the most positive and negative ways. And we need to kind of allow these experiences to carry them in the final. And if they carry it with them, they will be mentally then ready to recover from this big loss and be ready to win maybe the first title. I was convinced of that. And we ended up having all these pictures on pretty big posters to the side, and we put them from every single match of the whole season. So the day before, like 2 days before the cup final, what ended up happening was they walked into the locker room, and all of a sudden there's these huge pictures going all the way down the whole aisle, one picture from each match. And there were wins and losses, everything, including the semifinal we lost. And they just went through, and they were just kind of like, here, you know, like, this didn't get it. And then finally, when we explained what it was, you know, they understood, but I explained before the cup finals that these are your experiences. This is what makes you guys you. And the fact is that you're always trying to be this positive, strong, you know, oh, we have to be the best, we have to be attacking it. No, you have to use all these things that you already have here and you have here. You have to take them with you into the final. And if you do that, if you really do that and recognize what makes you guys you, then yeah, you can win this first final. You can do it. And they ended up doing it in a very, very dramatic way. Go back and look at it. We'll go into detail. I think this is an example, a great example of, yes, you can make a couple of adjustments to the tactical things or to, you know, the technical things. And yet it's really more about just kind of revamping the way you look at what makes you you, what experiences you have. And I really think you can translate this to life in a lot of different ways. If you could have any big event coming up and you feel like, I always seem to can't seem to get on that big stage, I can't seem to do it, you know? And it's like, okay, well, what if every single experience you've had up until now was so that you can do it this one time? And having that kind of flip in your head
Yeah, love it, love it. Getting
can really
goosebumps
help.
right away. And I have something similar because always when I'm have to make an important presentation or I have to speak for a crowd of people, when I feel that I'm getting nervous, I had to do a moderation on a christening of a cruise ship. I was, I think, 36, something like that, and it was in front of 200,000 people. And
200,000, just for the record.
yeah, 200,000. So, and always when I'm now in a situation where I think, okay, there will be, I don't know, 500 or something like that, and I'm getting a little bit, let's say, excited, then I say, ah, you have had already a bigger audience than you were like younger. You know what I mean? It's a little bit like that. So as that I really say, hey, you can handle things like that. So, and this gives me always the confidence that I could.
Cool. Yeah, wonderful. Really cool.
So, yeah, let's go a little bit more into the, let's say, recovery. When someone notices they are mentally burned out, let's say that, what is the very first step back to strength?
Great news, you recognize that you're burned out.
That's true.
I know that sounds silly, but that's wow. If you're at that point where you say, well, I'm burned out, like I don't have the energy, I can't do this, I can't do that, it might seem like a really silly thing to say, but you're in a great place. In the sense that you have recognized it, and now you can take as much control as you would like. As you would like, as you are able to. Okay? Now that means very different things for different people, right? So when you know, if we're talking about people clinically depressed, there are very different solutions and different ways to go as opposed to someone who is suffering from burnout, both very serious things. But of course, there are different ways to both treat and to maybe go about taking the next step forward.
Right. So I always like to separate that. I think that's very important. If we're speaking about someone who feels burnt out in a sense of family life, work, okay, again, silly sound, but it's not a terrible thing to say to yourself, great, I know I'm burnt out. That means I need to find a way to get my energy back. I need to find a way to get that flame lit again. What's that going to be? Okay. My biggest thing, of course, is if there's any community, if there's a trusted person, if there's someone you care about, or you know cares about you, it's seeking the connection to that person, communicating it to that person. If this person is this trusted confidant, is this person that you care about, they will help you take the first step. That's a huge, huge thing. If you can communicate it to someone, a human, the standard human reaction for someone we care about who says, I need help, is to lend your hand and say, okay, I'll do what I can. Right? So this is maybe a simpler thing if we say we have that person. If we don't have that person,
You have to find it.
You'd have to find it.
Yeah, simple as that.
You have to find it. And that might be someone professional. I think the one thing not to do, of course, and I usually try to look at what to do instead of what not to do. But what not to do, of course, is to search for, we were talking about the emotional trap, the reactional trap of then maybe going online, looking at things that get me then hours and hours, we call doom scrolling, those things that become extremely then addictive to your dopamine starved brain, right? So you're going to need a heck of a lot of self-care, a heck of a lot of, what's the word? Self-kindness, compassion, self-compassion for yourself, that you're not going to immediately then, okay, you're going to maybe still have another hour on your phone looking through Instagram. Yeah, okay. Yeah, me too, last Sunday. So we're on the same page, right? And probably 10 other people in your building or in your neighborhood who spent an hour or 2 hours on the phone as well. So these things, it's about giving yourself compassion that you're going to really need to take tiny, tiny steps of being active, trying a meditation, getting outside, having a conversation with someone. It might not be that you can have that conversation right away. We're talking about different levels here. You might not have that conversation right away that says, hey, I'm burnt out, I need help. But you might be able to have a conversation where you simply just engage with another human being. As you were saying, show interest in another human being. As silly as that sounds, you say, I have no energy. How am I going to show interest in another human being? Often with burnout, what I've experienced is people have burned out towards a very specific thing in their life.
Yeah.
So whether towards a relationship or towards their job or other things they tend, of course, to have a little bit of energy for. So kind of find a little niche thing in between where you say, okay, I just need energy, but I need a positive energy. Find something on my radar. As I said, that door is closed right now for me just simply because it's just sucking my energy. Look around you. Look around you, see if you can find that one door that you say, if I go through there, I'm pretty sure I'll get something in return. I'm going to take that risk, as tiny little energy that I have for the day. I'm going to go through that door because I know it's a healthy habit. Like, but I'm talking tiny things. I'm talking eating a healthy breakfast. I'm going to go to the bakery and get myself a nice loaf of bread today if that's what I want. Or I'm going to go to the, if I have a gym membership, I'm going to do that. I'm just going to go for a walk. Or I'm going to knock on my neighbor's, whatever it is, I'm going to call my mom. Could be this, right?
So I 100% agree. So for me personally, when I have to recover, I just have to take sometimes an hour, sometimes even more, sitting in a bathtub, and being surrounded by water, and having the feelings that no one is disturbing me because there is no iPhone or something, so I'm not taking with me to the master. And also, I don't know, I have a spa place in Hamburg where I love to go, which is I think it's on the 8th floor. So you have a great view to the Alster, and being in the sauna, sitting on the bed afterwards in a bathrobe. So these are moments for me to really recover. And sometimes people asking me, hey, can I join you? And I said, no.
because it is my it's me time again. I think this is, don't you think this is something like this is a pretty big step. I mean, we're in Berlin, so you're going to go to Hamburg, you can get on a train, or you're going to drive, you're going to have to go there. But these are great things for just getting that nice little energy boost, right?
Yeah.
So you feel really good after, or, you know, laying in the tub, that is something that someone who's at their home, if they have a tub, that's something that they probably can take that step towards and really let their body kind of soak and absorb just the heat of the water, just to feel that warmth, you know, to give you that little burst.
Also, it's a kind of grounding. Being in the water, it grounds you. And, and this is what I really love about it. So what is your personal ritual to, let's say, stay emotional centered?
Having a 4-year-old daughter keeps you pretty grounded pretty quickly. I'll tell you that. Especially one as sharp as mine. For me in general, family, of course, is kind of just a cornerstone that I keep sacred, that it's time with them, whether it's Sunday morning breakfasts or things like that. Those are very important rituals. The morning meditations, the evening meditations that I've done, you know, and I don't get it done every day. There's days I get missed. I wish it was as consistent as brushing my teeth. That's one thing I have. Thanks, Mom. I've really gotten down every single day, morning and night. But meditations are definitely those things that really do help me stay grounded, really help me take 5-10 minutes of my day to kind of just take a quick reflection. Thank you, is a good word. Yeah. And one of the other things I like to do to really calm my brain is I play chess.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I would love to, but honestly, I'm pretty bad at it.
I'm not great. I went Duolingo, great application in terms of, so dopamine addiction, to be fair. They're really great at keeping you in the loop.
Duolingo,
yeah, oh yeah, with language learning, right?
Yeah.
So they have like these little, you know, you have a certain amount of energy and you get little rewards. And so you always want to come back in the stream.
Yeah, but we're just about learning languages.
Yeah, but they also have chess and math.
Not really.
Yes. So Duolingo. Yeah. So they started chess and I always understood chess, but I was never good at it. And a lot of the players I work with, to get their mind off of football, they often play chess. We play backgammon. Backgammon is a little more simple.
And it's not so strategic from my point of view. It's just so you can have some moves in your mind, but at the end, it's always the same. You want to build a bridge, so block the other person.
It's
the same strategy more or less all the time, and you just need the right dice. It is not so strategic, but what I love about chess is the strategic thing.
Yeah.
And what I hate about it is that when you have experienced chess players, they just have memorized the first 8 moves from so many strategies.
Yeah.
Just recalling them so it is not really a strategic game, it's just a memory game at the end. This is what I don't like so much about it. So it's good to maybe we are having a good chess match because we are not memorizing. So I think you haven't memorized any strategic moves, and so then we maybe can really have a good match.
Not to plug Duolingo. I just think it was a great way to kind of learn exactly what we're talking about. These kind of what is this opening moves that everyone seems to know that I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so the thing is, once you get like these 4 or 5 moves, okay, then it just turns into an actual, what I consider an actual chess match.
Yeah.
Because I always felt after the first 5 moves, I'm so far behind. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And now at least I have the feeling, like I sit there and it is kind of, it is relaxing. I'm a very, you know, I'm someone who really likes to win. I can't help. I'm a very competitive person in general by nature. But chess is like, because I'm not that good at it, I take it in a very different kind of stride.
Yeah.
Right? At least for me, I can recommend it to people who are...
Love it. So I'm having a long train ride today, you too. So I'm definitely will play some chess. So what do you hope listeners take away from our conversation? So especially those struggling with mental overload.
Ooh. The first thing is... It's really tiny little steps in your day that start to add up to make the difference. Take that with you in that sense of really that building in of 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day or something like that, or even 5, 10 minutes, 3 times a week, something, anything that you can manage to just really get a reflection of a status of your mental state, and try a couple different things out. So yeah, there are meditation apps, and there's definitely guided meditations that I would very much recommend at the beginning. But try something like progressive muscle relaxation, which is much more tactile. You can feel the difference maybe a little bit, right?
I would say a good introduction to the world of meditation is just breath work. Also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The thing with breath, this is where I get into breath. I like breath work, right? I actually enjoy it. I think for people who already have kind of that door open, it's a good way to go. For people who are skeptical in general about what this is going to bring or what it can do for me, I find the tactile things to be much better. So whether it's the breath you feel, yeah. But if you, in general, are carrying a lot of stress in your shoulders, neck, and whatnot, and if you do a progressive muscle relaxation, I feel those who I've done that with at the beginning, they just already feel this difference, like a little bit less load. And they're like, okay, like I could think just a little more clearly or something. You know, you get to yoga and stuff. Yoga is something that is even more tactile, but it's almost then too much investment. You know, some people then connect it with other ideas and whatnot. So it's finding kind of what is that thing where I can take that first step towards treating myself better mentally, whether it's just a you know, meditation, a guided meditation, breath work, yoga, or muscle relaxation. And just the tools on YouTube are endless and whatnot. If you are going to use your phone, if you are going to go on a smart TV, you can definitely find something, and you can find something in pretty much every language. So there's not an excuse in that sense if you really would like to do it. So that would be one thing I'd say, take that from today. Find that one little tool that really can maybe help you find a little more clarity. Know that. I think this is also really important. These big guys that I was talking about, these big names that are at least in, you know, hot professional football, they're using the same things, right? It's one of the Germans loves is they also cook with water.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite German phrases.
Yeah,
they do. They're going to use the exact same thing, and that's kind of cool to know that his brain or her brain at that elite level, it works the same as you. We all have. You know, one of the great things is we all have these caveman brains we kind of talk about that they're just struggling a lot of times to deal with the modern world. And so why does turning off your brain for 10 minutes or let's say closing your eyes and just listening to your breath for 10 minutes feel so strange? Because what we used to do that because we had nothing else to do.
And we are not used to be bored anyway.
Yeah, exactly, right. So this is something, take that with you. Allow yourself these 10 minutes and understand that you're connecting, you, the elite athlete, the 90-year-old, the 9-year-old, this connects literally every single one of you. And it's kind of a cool thing to think about.
Love it. So Peter, thank you very much for this conversation. So if someone wants to learn a little more about you, I think you have a website.
Yes.
We will put in our show notes. And I just have to say thank you that you come from Leipzig.
Yeah, very much. It was great. Thank you.
Do you have a favorite supplement?
I do. I take this all-in-one from Sunday Naturals. Actually, my wife recommended it to me, and that's just for me. It was the simplest, best way to get everything I need for a day, one a day.
Is it the premium with 4 capsules or just 1 capsule?
1 capsule.
Oh, just 1 capsule. Okay, I got it. I will give you the premium version then.
Thank you.
Maybe it was worse to come to Berlin. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd be thrilled if you could leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. To make sure you never miss out, subscribe to our newsletter. It's not just about this podcast. We regularly introduce new products, often with special introductory discounts. You wouldn't want to miss out on that, wouldn't you? Subscribe to our newsletter at www.sunday.de/newsletter.